The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Avila.
Here.
Vice Chair Tribuzzi.
Here.
Representatives Altman. Ranking Member Brown.
Here.
Representatives Duran.
Here.
Garrison.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Salzman. Saroy.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Woodson.
Yeah.
Yarborough.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina. Members, a quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Members, today we will be hearing from the Agency for Healthcare Administration on their FX project and the Department of Elder Affairs on the Enterprise Client Information and Registration Tracking System. Members, we're going to begin with the Agency for Healthcare Administration. Madam Secretary. So, members, we have from the Agency for Healthcare Administration, we have Secretary Marsteller, okay, and Julie Madden, the Deputy Secretary of Operations. Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. It is so nice to see you all again so soon. I am quite happy to be here today to talk to you about the agency's FX project. Just to very quickly, for members of the public who may not be aware of what we do, I'm going to very quickly step through high-level overview of the Agency for Healthcare Administration. As I said to you all last week, our mission is better healthcare for all Floridians. The agency's core functions are: we are the state's chief health policy and planning entity. We administer the Florida Medicaid program. We also license and regulate the nearly 50,000 healthcare facilities in the state. We do all of this while leveraging technology to support those core functions and to improve access to health data and enhance the integration among agencies. This last function that we do is really key to what we're here to talk about today. We have four agency objectives, as I mentioned last week. We are one ACA, one agency, one team. We are searching for cost-effective solutions to leverage Florida's buying power to deliver high-quality care at the lowest cost to taxpayers. We want to make sure that we are supporting initiatives that promote transparency, to empower consumers to make well-informed healthcare decisions, and overarching, we want to emphasize high quality in everything we do to improve health outcomes, always putting the individual first. These three, well, four objectives, but the three, cost-effective, transparent, high quality, are the three main things that Governor DeSantis wants for the healthcare system in the state of Florida. So today, I am really pleased and excited, candidly, to talk to you all about our FX project. We're gonna give you an overview of the project. We're gonna talk about project alignment. I wanna tell you about the steering committee for this project. We wanna explain to you what our current state Medicaid information system looks like, what the future state will look like through the FX project. We're going to talk to you and show you what the timeline is. It's a multi-year project. We're certainly going to give you specifics about the project budget and also give you an idea of what our future opportunities are with this really important transformation project. So first, what is FX exactly? FX is short for Florida Healthcare Connections. We call it FX. It is a multi-year transformation of our legacy Medicaid technology and operations system known as FEMIS, or the Florida Medicaid Management Information System. I'm going to call it FEMIS because that's quite a mouthful, and we in government like our acronyms. So the vision for FX is to transform Florida's Medicaid enterprise to provide the best value, highest quality health care to Floridians. While the core purpose of FX is to replace the FEMIS, which is the computer system that kind of runs, right, the billing and the provider enrollment and things like that. FX is truly going to be and should be transformational in how the agency does business and interacts with our stakeholders. And transformation really is, for me, the word of the day. I was in Orlando earlier this morning speaking to a very large group of architects, engineers, and folks who design healthcare facilities. And I said to them, as I move around the state, that Florida really is poised to transform our healthcare system, particularly coming out of COVID, learning the lessons in healthcare delivery and healthcare facility management and patient management and things like that. So I'm really very excited and thankful to Governor DeSantis to be able to helm this agency at this time. So why FX? To better explain what this project is about and what our objectives are, our team has created this slide that sort of dives into why FX matters. First, why? We need to enable an ecosystem of high quality and accessible data, which reduces the complexity around data and improves the provider and recipient experience. How do we get there? In concert with Governor DeSantis's interoperability and agile technology directives, this project focuses on the use of modular technology solutions and management practices, and through tracking healthcare outcomes, we focus on the customer rather than solely on the technology, focusing on a human-centered approach rather than solely on technology. And it's about the end users, it's about the consumers of healthcare, it's about our providers for Medicaid, it's about everyone who is going to interact with the system, including our sister HHS agencies. The how then influences our overall goal, which includes improving healthcare outcomes, being a good steward of our state and federal resources, and driving quality through data-driven, evidence-based decision-making, which can and will have a lasting impact on Florida's healthcare market through quality and transparency. Now, unlike your typical technology projects of the past, FX aligns with many of the best practices that you may have heard about from both the Florida Digital Service and from Chief Inspector General Miguel's recent report regarding the Connect system. This includes taking a modular approach. In a few minutes, you will hear from my colleague, Julie Madden, who is our Deputy Secretary of Operations, on the current state of our legacy FEMIS system. But put plainly, FEMIS was built as a system in itself. Think about it like a black box, meaning if you have to make a change to the system, you're going to impact the entire thing. What we're doing with FX is moving to a modular approach, which allows for projects to accommodate changes over time and, importantly, to respond to the evolving technological landscape. Doing it this way, as opposed to simply buying a one-piece, if you will, FEMIS replacement, puts us in a good position moving forward, keeping in mind where Florida's enterprise architecture is also going. Next, the project reinforces Governor DeSantis's efforts to increase data sharing and interoperability among the Health and Human Service agencies. As you saw in the prior slide, ultimately we're going to be able to decrease costs and increase health outcomes and improve health outcomes through interagency data sharing. We continue to work with our sister agencies on data sharing agreements to better coordinate the healthcare of Floridians under our mutual care. In alignment with Florida's cloud-first strategy, this project also accounts for cloud-based solutions that can scale up or down as utilization increases and decreases. Instead of looking at this as simply a technology project, FX focuses more broadly on outcomes and achieving the agency's overall mission of better health care for all Floridians. We're using technology as a tool to change the way we do business. And after all, isn't that what technology is about? Is changing the way we do business, improving the way we do business. We are focused on acquiring both internal and external skilled technical talent to ensure that this project has the resources necessary to be successful. When I arrived at the agency in February, one of the first things I did was to elevate the FX team to report to our executive team, specifically to Deputy Secretary Madden, rather than where it was, which was sort of buried in a program area. And the reason I did this was because this project is so important, not just to the agency, but to the state of Florida and ultimately to the consumers of healthcare, that it needed to be to have the proper place in our organization. The project team is led by our project director, Mike Magnuson, who is in the audience with us today. Julie and Mike are leading with a one ACA team focus, and they are committed to getting this project right. While we have several key team members on board, we do need additional resources to ensure that this project is successful. As I mentioned to you last week, and as Julie will talk a little bit more about in a minute, investing in more personnel resources in our Office of FX will ensure that we are balancing both our internal and our external talent necessary to ensure project success. So this slide shows you our FX steering committee. We have a steering committee because ACA is not alone in this effort. The steering committee is comprised of stakeholders across state healthcare and the financial enterprise to ensure that the project is being developed in a collaborative, user-focused way. So you can see, especially across the bottom, our agency partners. We have DFS, Elder Affairs, our Healthy Kids Corporation, Agency for Persons with Disabilities, the Department of Health, Department of Children and Families, and our state CIO is also a member of our steering committee. One of the other things that I did when I came on board was to ask for members of this committee to represent the top tier in each state agency. In other words, I made a personal request to the agency heads of these agencies to personally participate on this steering committee because we want to make sure that there is awareness of this project at the executive and policymaking level in all of these agencies and that the impacted agencies have a seat at the table in every discussion. Now, while we recognize that at the executive level, everyone will not have the technical expertise to really move this project along, I have asked our partner agencies to devote internal module-specific technical experts to assist our team in this effort to ensure that participating agencies have their needs met through the FX project. And I really want to thank my agency partners for rising to the occasion and giving us and devoting to us the personnel resources from inside their individual agencies to give us the technical feedback that we need about their business needs and about their IT needs as well to make sure that we are addressing the agencies moving forward. So I've given you now a very brief overview of the FX project. So from here, I'd like to introduce you to our Deputy Secretary of Operations, Julie Madden, who is with us today, and she's going to go into the more specific, more detailed aspects of the project. Julie has significant experience in the technology area, having previously served Florida at the Department of Management Services as Deputy Secretary of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, and most recently as Chief Information Officer for the the Department of Children and Families. And I want to let you all know, I have known and worked with Julie since 2004 when I myself was the state CIO. And I have every confidence in her technical skills, in her project management skills, in the fact that she understands what technology is supposed to do. And I know that she gets deep in the weeds to understand our business processes as well as those of our sister agencies. And I know that she is the right person to oversee this project through to its completion successfully. So with that, I will pass it on to Julie. Thank you.
Good intro, Madam Secretary. Very high praise. Ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you, Secretary Marstall. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to you today and provide an overview of FX. Currently, the Florida Medicaid Management System, FMIS, is a large monolithic system that supports the management of recipients, provider enrollment, pharmacy benefits, claims and encounters processing, electronic data exchanges, and a decision support system integrated with multiple call centers for support. This system runs on antiquated server-based technology with limited environments, computing power, and capacity. These aging systems are also more vulnerable to cybersecurity risks, and changes to the system to support new and federal state requirements take significant time to implement, impacting compliance. As the system continues to age, hardware and software components will reach end of life, and system support will be limited. The system is also operated and maintained by a single vendor, which further limits support. Interfaces that provide data to the system are not timely and cause processing errors, payment delays, and require resubmissions not mandated and contributing to data quality issues. In addition to replacing the system, we are also tasked with replacing the current fiscal agent contract, which includes staff providing services to the program, such as call center support, processing provider enrollment applications, and handling claims exceptions. These challenges, and with the directive and 90% federal funds participation from CMS, provide an opportunity for the agency to implement a more secure, high availability, cloud-based Medicaid ecosystem. This modular, multi-vendor approach brings experienced vendors and best-of-breed products integrated with a single source of truth data environment. With this solution, current operating inefficiencies, such as duplicative name and address change updates, will be streamlined and automated across programs, improving the recipient and provider experience. And data that is replicated in multiple places today will be centralized, cleaned, and securely shared internally and externally with parties that have a right to know. What this modular approach means is each technical and functional component that is currently embedded in the old system will be procured and implemented as a separate module and integrated to operate as an enterprise scalable solution. These modules, which will be explained further on the next slides, include Integration Services Integration Platform, the Enterprise Data Warehouse, Unified Operations Center, Provider Services Module, CORE, which is our Claims Processing Module, Pharmacy Benefits Management Module, and future modules that have integrated connections to all of the other modules in our ISIP and EDW. The Integration Services Integration Platform, ISIP, is the infrastructure that supports how we send and receive data internally and externally. This platform includes solutions for managing access to the system and data and how we will uniquely identify providers. This platform is the foundation for replacing all of the legacy integration within FMIS, with near real-time reusable data requests in cooperation with other agencies and external entities. ISIP is the foundation that supports the Florida Digital Service and Governor's interoperability initiatives. The Enterprise Data Warehouse is a single repository for all agency data. This module supports the Florida Digital Services Initiative for Data Management and includes tools and services to clean and protect data, analyze data, and improve reporting for plan performance, network adequacy, and quality improvement initiatives, and increase identification and recovery of fraudulent and improper payments. Starting with the first module, the Unified Operations Center, is the module that is customer-centric and consolidates multiple agency call centers and back-office support, providing integrated access to customer and claims data for recipients and providers. The UOC also includes access to other agency data and supports warm transfers of constituent calls. All of this improves the recipient and provider experience. The Provider Services module provides one entry point for providers to enroll or re-enroll and be credentialed and re-credentialed through a web-based self-service tool with easy-to-follow steps, help tips, and data validation on the front end to check for errors early in the provider process. Some examples of validation checks include background screening, risk assessment, and fees owed. This module will be the online tool for providers to submit documents to one secure shared repository. Providers will also be able to receive communications and update information. All of this eliminating the need to update information in multiple places and submit duplicative information. This minimizes data errors and confusion in the provider community. Next, we have the CORE claims processing module, which validates and processes medical claims for payment to Medicaid managed care plans and providers. Validating on the front end will significantly reduce rejected claims and improve times to process and pay. Finally, the Pharmacy Benefits Management module performs financial and clinical services for the fee-for-service Medicaid population, processes pharmacy claims, integrates with pharmacy point-of-sale systems, and provides drug approvals prior to dispensing. With all modules implemented and fully integrated with other internal and external systems, including staff trained to perform the services, the current Florida Medicaid Management Information System, FMIS, can be sunset. This slide is a snapshot of the timeline and summarizes where we started, where we are, and what's ahead. Key points that I want the committee to keep in mind are prior to 2016, the agency started to replace FMIS, but with current technology challenges and the landscape changing, CMS changed direction and required states to implement a solution with a modular approach. This required the agency to revise its strategy and resubmit its plan, which was approved in December of 2016. Initial services procured included independent verification and validation services, IVNV, and strategic enterprise advisory services, which we call SEAS. IVNV and SEAS are important for a program of this magnitude. CMS requires a third-party IVNV vendor to assess and evaluate plans, implementation efforts, and deliverables. IVNV identifies risks early in the project where there is an opportunity to correct. SEAS provides research and strategic planning for transformation, program governance, and project management to ensure resources are directed to the projects as needed, procurement support, and programmatic and technical advisory services. SEAS runs parallel with agency staff and can fluctuate based on project needs. The SEAS vendor also is also precluded from bidding on any future modules. Next, ISIP and EDW were procured. This was followed by the procurement ISIP and EDW modules, with the ISIP foundation implemented and the EDW implementation started. This year's General Appropriations Act directed the agency to competitively procure the UOC, provider, and core modules through invitations to negotiate. Both the UOC and provider ITNs are on the street, and the core module is in the final stages of development. I may not be able to answer specific questions that would impact the integrity of the procurement process. During 2022 to 2024, the FX program will procure the pharmacy benefits management module and implement and integrate all modules with the ISIP and EDW to deliver a FEMIS replacement. The next slide shows the project budget to date. As mentioned earlier, the program is approved by CMS and receives 90% federal funds participation. The actual spend through 2021 is $91 million. This includes our cloud environments, hardware, infrastructure as a service, software licensing, software, and professional services. The appropriated amount for this fiscal year is $67 million, with the current actual spend for the first quarter currently at $9 million. Estimated total through this fiscal year is $158 million. Our current budget request for fiscal year 22-23 is $117.79 million, $84 million non-recurring and $33.6 million recurring for the operations and maintenance of the implemented ISIP and EDW environments. This includes multiple products and solutions for the modules and a significant work effort to implement and integrate all modules. In addition to the request for funding to support the modernization effort, the Office of FX is requesting $1.97 million for an additional 12 FTE and 5 OPS positions to support module system planning, implementation, and ongoing support. As with the project itself, the personnel cost also received 90% federal funds participation. These positions include a chief data officer, an operation and program compliance manager, and various business and information technology positions to align with contracted vendors to support agency technical and program responsibilities. It is critical to build a blended team of experienced internal and external talent to ensure this project is successful. Underestimating resources and not having the necessary talent is a primary reason projects fail. Future modules to be implemented and integrated in the FX solution include third-party liability, Medicaid managed care plan management, case management, and vendor management. There are also additional opportunities to support facility licensure capabilities for the Division of Health Quality Assurance. Thank you for your time today. The Secretary and I are now available for any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for that presentation. Members, questions? Representative Hardy. Harding, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And I have two questions, if you don't mind.
Go for it. Thank you. You're recognized.
We talked at one point about the fraud part of this. And well, first of all, thank you both for your presentation. We mentioned earlier in the presentation about one of the advantages to this update and this program is hopefully the fraud issue. And I'm just curious if we've done any studies on the potential, what that fraud impact improvement could be as far as what how significant of an upgrade are we talking about in capturing some of the fraud within the system?
Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
At this point, I can't say that we have specifically done the study. I would say this. We know that this new technology, because of the way that it's going to work in a much better, much more efficient way than our FEMIS currently works, is going to enable us to have clean data, cleaner claims processing, and catch those fraudulent claims a lot earlier. What I would say is, what we will have to do is get this thing up and running to really see and be able to put some dollars to it. But I'll go back to the team and see if we can't come up with a ballpark. But I would ask the committee not to hold us to that ballpark, right? Because, again, we don't know what we don't know at this point. What we do know is that the new technology is going to be a heck of a lot better, much more efficient, and create cost savings for the state.
Thank you. Thank you for the answer. And I think as a business guy, I have a hard time getting that ROI, you know, out of my head where that return. And so thank you for that. The last question I'll have, and it's kind of got two parts, but they both are hitting on the same point. And that is, I think it was slide 8 had all the different steering committees that are involved in this process. And I'm curious what the private sector input, some of the providers are, and then also maybe what that cost impact potentially could be for, you know, we talked last committee meeting about rural healthcare and let's say a privately owned urgent care in rural Florida, what could the cost impact be for them to get in line with this new program?
You're recognized.
Well, to answer, I guess, part one of your question, the steering committee is part of our proviso, right? So it specifies who can be and is on the steering committee. From a private sector perspective, as Julie mentioned earlier, because we are putting this thing together module by module, we are going to have, rather than a single vendor perspective, we are going to have several vendors at the table coming to the state of Florida with proposed solutions that hopefully will give us the best value for the money that the state and the federal government is investing in this project. You also heard about the IVNV and the SEAS. They bring a lot of private sector expertise and insight and advice to us as we put this thing together and as we roll out the project. So from that perspective, we are getting some good, solid private sector perspectives and assistance in rolling this project out. You know, future state, as you heard, a big part of what this program and this project is going to do is going to make it easier for providers to enroll. It's going to give us greater data and visibility into what's really going on, not only in healthcare, but certainly in the Medicaid space as well. And I think it creates a lot of opportunities that maybe we don't even see right now relative to doing the kinds of things that I know, Representative, that you are concerned about. One thing I do know is that from a provider perspective, the experience is going to be a heck of a lot better and less complicated and less convoluted than it is today. It's going to be cleaner, it's going to be self-serve, and it's going to be efficient. And that is ultimately what we're looking for.
Representative Smith, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I have some questions, Secretary, because you mentioned that so many of these concepts align. I think you mentioned that it aligned with the Connect investigation findings, maybe I guess the preliminary findings. I think that investigation is still going on, and that it aligns with Florida Digital Service. Can you talk specifically about how these program enhancements align with the preliminary findings of the Connect investigation from Deloitte, which found that there was, quote, fatal and severe system defects, not enough stress testing? Is that something that applies here? Is there any lessons learned that align from that preliminary investigation?
You're recognized, Madam Secretary.
Well, there are certainly many lessons learned. Primarily for this project, what I'm really proud of, and with CMS's help and approval, is that we were out front taking a modular approach to replacing a legacy system. which is not something that happened with Connect. And as we learned from CIG Miguel's report, that a modular system really would have been the way to go, would have been much better, created a much better outcome, probably would have prevented a lot of the issues that that system saw. The other thing is that, and one of the reasons that we are asking in our LBR for the internal resources who have the technical experience and knowledge is to make sure that the vendors are doing exactly what we need for them to do, to make sure that testing gets done, to make sure the right questions are asked internally. We can't put ourselves in a position in which we're simply relying on the vendors to tell us what to do and what's working and what's right. We have to have the internal resources to do that. And that is certainly something that I believe is a very important takeaway from Inspector Miguel's report.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer. You know, that part in particular about having the internal knowledge is crucial. If I contracted with a vendor, if they told me everything works fine, I guess I would just defer to them because I'm not an IT expert. So does that come in the form of, from your LBR from last week, does that come in the form of FTEs where we're hiring IT experts that essentially are helping with the oversight of this technical upgrade? And also, do you foresee any hiring challenges or employee retainer challenges? Because I know that, for example, in another committee, we've heard from Florida Digital Service, and they've struggled with turnover and being able to retain that type of expert talent. If you could speak to that.
You're recognized.
We certainly intend to recruit top talent to the extent that we can and to the extent that we can afford it. What you heard from the Florida Digital Service representative is a challenge, quite candidly, across state agencies trying to recruit and retain IT expertise. And we put together what I believe is a request that can enable us to do it. Julie just sort of stepped through some of the major positions that we would be recruiting for, including a chief data officer. Those things are critical, not just to make sure that this program gets implemented, but moving forward, to make sure that it continues to do exactly what we need for it to do. I assure you that should we find in later years that we need to retain more talent or that we are losing talent, my agency will come and ask for additional resources.
Follow up, you recognize Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, Secretary. One final follow-up. Do the FX project contracts, do they require the vendors to make future system updates and be able to fix errors and things of that nature on the IT side? Or, you know, what is the ongoing nature of the contract? Because we know that these systems are going to require continual updates regardless of whether we have in-house IT staff that can help with that. What's the vendor's obligation there?
You're recognized.
Yeah, the current contracts include the support that we would need for operations and maintenance of the environments or modules, but also task orders to do those, any type of enhancements that are necessary to work with the new modules.
Representative Duran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just follow up on that response you had there. Is the vendor, one of the opportunities there is multiple vendors and to look through different vendors who might be able to assist with the implementation of these different modules. Is that process still in play? Are there still folks who can pitch and to propose a project, one of these projects? Is that, what does that look like and what's the timeline on that end?
Ma'am, you're recognized.
The ISIP and EDW contracts are already underway, but the procurements have been released for the provider module. For provider module, CORE will soon be released, and UOC is already on the street. So those vendors have an opportunity that have a solution to bid on that work.
Follow?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So the other question I had on this end was, I noticed in some of the slides you had put there's claims processing, also with providers. I know there's an issue with new providers who want to come online and become a Medicaid provider. Sometimes it takes quite a while for them to register and then be able to actually get paid back for some of the services that they delivered. So getting them registered, one thing, is this also a tool that allows the providers to monitor those claims or understand who their patients are, that they're going to be able to use that leverage that data or receive that data as well for their own care management?
You're recognized.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to be able to do, is to have that visibility into that information, but also have a self-service portal that they would be able to go through, have an account and go through and be able to provide that information one time, where today they have to provide a lot of information to, you know, multiple areas of the state, you know, within ACA and other agencies.
Last follow?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last question on that is, for those providers, for those who are getting able to do that, is that free? Are they able to do that for free? They just have an account and they'll be able to access that data?
You're recognized.
Not a question I've asked, but I would assume so.
They don't pay for it now.
No.
Yeah. Might want to ask that one. Thank you, Representative Duran. Representative Salzman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Secretary. I have a question. I'm not sure if we can answer it here. I think Representative Harding kind of touched on it. We're doing a task force locally in my area for mental health specifically, but just trying to connect the services of care, all of the care from the courthouse to the warden to the DCF, you know, to the superintendent. And obviously we understand that the healthcare system, the whole system, is disjointed. And you explained that very clearly today. So we're trying to find a way to connect those dots in our community to kind of show how it can be done. And how we've done that is we brought all of the private and public sector care providers together, sharing data. One piece of the conversation we found is, you know, some of that data they don't really want to share with their competitors. So part of that process of figuring out how to fix that has been get a software system or system in place that collects all the data but only shares the data particularly needed in whatever system it is that we're looking at, whether it be a homeless service or a DCF case or whatever. And I understand y'all are doing some stuff with DCF in Hillsboro, which is really promising, having that overlay where they can connect that care. And what we're looking at, what I'm looking at from a perspective as a legislator, is the cost savings, which is how it circles back to Representative Harding. You know, we are moving now from that competition of care to that access to care model, which is critical. It saves us a lot of money in the long run, obviously, because due to this disjointed system, we've been just so out there. So using this overlay will help us connect the information, and in turn, it would be like if you had a child that was reported as being abused or whatever, and then nothing came of that case and you had it four times, you know that there's nothing real there, but they probably need counseling or maybe there's some alcoholism or something, and it would connect those dots and share that care. So if you have a department or people in your organization that are going to be able to look at, because you're doing the same thing at the state level of what we're trying to do at that local level, just in a different way. Is there someone that, if there is, could you connect me to somebody to talk more about that? And if you do find some information, kind of to Harding's point, on what the cost savings would be for the state, I think it's really good to share that. You know, when you're not using the same resources three times, you know, you save those resources, those dollars, effectively in the long run, which I think we're going to see a huge cost savings whenever you can implement this. Is there a plan in place to catch all of that data, not necessarily for the fraud cases, but for all of it? I hope that was...
Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
You have absolutely captured the vision of FX. I could have let you do this. But seriously, that is exactly what we're trying to do here, right? So we're at its core replacing FEMIS. But when we have the Department of Children and Families or the Department of Elder Affairs or the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, right? We have the enterprise, why it's called the Enterprise Data Warehouse, so that we have one location where that information is housed in each one of the agencies. Again, that's exactly why they're on the steering committee, to make sure that we are building a system and a program that's going to help each of these agencies do that. One place to go for the data, one place to go to know what kind of care has been given, needs to be given, as that child moves, you know, potentially from the Department of Health to Department of Children and Families. You know, we will all know he or she might, may or may not be a Medicaid recipient, but that shouldn't matter, right? This is exactly what we're trying to accomplish with FX.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's it. Basically, it's if a child is, DCF has a case open and they see that they don't really need to have an open case, but it's, you know, check the box, we'll just file it away as an incident, or I'm not sure what they call it, that might trigger to know that the child may need food bank assistance or counseling assistance or whatever. And so we're trying to connect those dots with an overlay of software, which I think we're pretty close. We just started this task force 6 months ago, and we've come eons. And that leads me to my follow-up, was just to say thank you. Your office has been phenomenal. They have been such a huge resource. And the chair mentioned months ago that I needed to call you guys and some others and bring everybody to the table. And we would not be where we are in the panhandle if it wasn't for your office being so incredible. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Thank you. I will take that back to the team.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Secretary, again. It's good seeing you for such a nice presentation, detailed presentation. My question has to do with any system conversion. You have to have system updates. And also, to those system updates, you want to make sure that it does not cost the state additional money. Does your contract, the contract for the vendors, stipulate no additional significant cost to the state when it comes to executing memos or change orders or system updates? Does your contract require, you know, specify that to your vendors?
Ma'am, you're recognized.
Sure. The current contracts have the fixed fee portion, which is for them to maintain and support. So if an update needed to be required for the environment, then it would be covered. If there are enhancements that are defined, then that's what we define as a task order. And so we would have to define the scope of that change, those requirements and design, and then, agree to what that cost would be. So some of it is and some of it isn't.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. System updates can be very costly. I went through several conversions in Miami-Dade County, and this is something that's very important when you having a contract with the vendors. I think that's something that I would look at because it could come back very costly to the state. As far as the personnel as well, whenever you're having those conversions, that they can delay processes that could cause either providers getting paid or as well significant life-saving services that our constituents might need. Is that also factored into the contracts with your vendors?
You're recognized.
Were you referring to the staff that
whenever,
would be providing the service?
Whenever you have to go to system updates or change orders.
We're still talking the system.
Right.
Changes.
Okay. Is that included in your contract, you know, with the vendors to make sure they have significant staff to address those in a timely manner in order for system not to be, you know, breaking services or life-saving services that might be needed or payment to providers?
You're recognized.
Yeah, those kind of changes that would need to be made to the system to make sure that the systems are staying online and are able to provide those services would be covered. And I'm only referring to what we already have under contract with ISIP and EDW, which was to build out those environments for us. The contracts that we will have for the other modules, you know, what comes out of that procurement would be determined, what was the scope that was, you know, fixed price or, you know, to be determined through fixed fee. And so we have not defined that yet. We have an opportunity to build that out based on whatever those needs are.
You recognize Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that's where I'm going. Where I'm going with it, usually, whenever we had to have system updates, I don't know if you know about EFS, the EFS system that the state was using at one time. Whenever you have to do the system updates, they don't have enough staff to do the system updates, and that delayed the process. And if you have, let's just say you have a payments transmittal to submit by, on a timely manner, it doesn't happen because they don't have enough personnel in order to do it. So I'm asking, do you have that factored into your contract in order to make sure the system updates are done in a timely manner in order for us not to have any issues with either payment or also services that might be needed?
Ma'am, you're recognized.
The contracts also require a certain number of key personnel, positions to be filled, performance measures. They can't meet performance measures if they don't have enough staff to be able to perform those services. So it's there's a lot of language in the contract to support the state to make sure that that level of support is there to keep those systems up and running, staff to maintain support, certain changes get defined that are covered in the contract versus what's a change. So it really would depend on each contract, but I understand what you want to make sure is in the contract to protect the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our Vice Chair, Representative Trabosa, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, ladies, for your presentation. Before I ask my question, I'd like to tell you that I really like the way that you put together your steering committee. I think that bringing everybody to the table is so important, and I think it's very thoughtful. My question is about cost effectiveness, and based on what we're spending now and the cost of FX and the anticipated savings that we hope to have, how long do you think that break-even point will be?
Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
Madam Vice Chair, that's a fantastic question, and I always tell my staff, don't ever answer a question, well, that's a great question. you know, this is a multi-year, very expensive project. Don't think that we don't recognize that. Where the break-even will be is really going to depend on the level of efficiencies that we can gain, not just from replacing FEMIS, but also from the other agencies coming on board to really fully utilize the system and the program as it has been intended and envisioned. I cannot stand here today and say that we have calculated a break-even point or when it's gonna happen, but I can assure you that even starting now with our ISIP layer and our EDW, we are using those modules today. They're not just sitting there waiting for 2024 to be used. They're being used now, and they're going to continue to be used, and we're going to continue to see our investment in that technology used and be fruitful, even as we bring the other modules on, and as our sister agencies also are able to interconnect and use EDW. I'm really excited, quite candidly, about EDW. But where and when that break-even point is, give us a little more time.
Members, we have about 5 more minutes for questions so that we can get to the next presentation. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Secretary and Ms. Madden. I'm not sure who to direct my question to, but whoever you think is the most appropriate responder. The concept is impressive, and I love the interoperability and efficiencies of all the agencies being able to speak to each other, all the sister agencies. My question is in regard to the security and safety of the data and any potential breach. So is ACCA responsible for the system, and are there appropriate, I'm not sure if I'm using the right words, firewalls in place that would protect the other agencies so that, you know, a breach of ACCA isn't a breach of absolutely everybody?
Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
We have certainly those standards now with our existing systems, but we will have those, and we'll need to have those things in place, which is why it's important for us to have a chief data officer to make sure that we have someone overseeing how that data is governed and its security, why it's also important to have the state CIO on our steering committee to make sure that we are thinking about those things and doing them the right way, because, again, this project and this program extends beyond just the Agency for Healthcare Administration. So we will have those things in place, yes.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer. When we had a presentation with the Chief Data Officer, there was some concern that agency has the ability to identify a breach, but not or suspicious activity, but not the authority to do anything without the permission of the agency where the suspected breach is located. So is that something that is part of the conversations that you're having with your committee, that there is some agreement, even if it's at an informal level, that agency, when it suspects something, that the other sister agencies will allow them to then investigate it further and make sure that there's an effective level of security?
Madam Secretary, you're recognized.
Representative, I know right now that we do have certainly data sharing agreements with our sister agencies, which include significant provisions about security and the potential for breaches and things like that. But specific to your question, I have not had that conversation candidly with the state CIO, but it certainly is something that I will talk to him about. And if it's something for the steering committee to discuss and raise higher, we certainly will do that.
Members, further questions? Further questions? Before we move on, I have a question for you, Madam Secretary. So looking at slide 19, historically, ACCA has always come in with a large LBR request. And the legislature has usually funded less. So in saying that, ACCA still continues to complete all of those tasks and actually reverts a lot of that money that the legislature allocates back to general revenue, right? In saying that, looking at slide 21, where you're requesting $119.76 million, I mean, based on that pattern, right, of historically asking for more, and then the legislature historically funding less, yet you still completing the task and reverting that excess funding, would it not be, considered that the $119 million request for your LBR for the FX is a little excessive or overstated?
Mr. Chairman, no. It is not. It is neither excessive nor overstated. In times past, yes, we have had to revert some funds, but I think those, in some times past, those funds have been reappropriated, if you will, for us to use. My concern and my fear is that with reduced funding to this project, especially at the point that we're at now, we are on the street with 2 out of 3 major procurements for this year. our funding request ensures that those modules are going to be able to be implemented properly, that we are going to be able to integrate them with the two modules that are currently up and running, that we're going to have the internal staff to do it. I understand, believe me, I do understand the legislature's very difficult task in making sure that all of our services across the state enterprise are funded and funded appropriately. But I do know that in times past, from the outside looking in, it seems like we have made do with less, but it has prevented us from really fully and properly doing what we need to do according to the plan that we have and according to the plan that CMS has approved. And so the proposal or the request that we have is as conservative as we could make it, but it is necessary to do what we know we need to do if this project and program is going to be successful in the next fiscal year.
All right, with that, thank you, Madam Secretary. Thank you for, and also, ma'am, thank you so much for both of you. I mean, just did an outstanding job. So thank you on your presentation. Members, we're going to move on now to the Department of Elder Affairs with Secretary Prudhon. And the department and Mr. Secretary, you will be giving us a presentation on e-certs.
Yes, sir.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back here. Seems a couple of weeks ago I was here talking about our legislative budget request. As I stated back then, the Department of Elder Affairs does serve as a state unit on aging and the primary state agency for administering human services programs for the elders here in Florida. These services are provided through our Division of Statewide Community-Based Services, which works through the state's 11 area agencies on aging, the service provider lead agencies, and other local services providers. I actually have two AAA directors here today, Kristen Griffiths from Elder Options in Gainesville, and then Lisa Bretz from Advantage Aging Solutions here in Tallahassee, here to talk about issues that have affected them with our e-certs implementation, if you should so desire to ask some questions. We also administer, remember as well when I said there's a misconception that the services that we provide are medical services, but they are not. Instead, they are social and human services. But although they're not medical services, they are still very important as they do support the health and well-being of our older Floridians. We also administer other programs like the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, the Office of Public and Professional Guardians, and CARES, the Comprehensive Assessment and Review for Long-Term Care Services, which works closely with ARCA as people are enrolled in long-term care services. I also mentioned last time that we have about 5.5 million people here in Florida age 60 and older. By 2030, it's going to increase to about 7.6 million. So it is and will be essential for the department, the area agencies on aging, and the service providers to efficiently manage all available resources entrusted to us by the legislature to address the needs of those individuals. Effectively managing hundreds of millions of dollars in funding for home and community-based services for seniors requires that antiquated, inefficient technologies be replaced with cost-efficient, easily implemented cloud-based technologies that do not require large IT and infrastructure investments and are easy to maintain. Now, such technology is essential to our success in meeting the challenges ahead and ensuring that Florida's older adults do have the resources they need to remain in their homes and communities. So purpose of the Enterprise Client Information and Registration Tracking System, ECERTS, project is to replace our current legacy system, which is almost 30 years old. And actually, Tanya Jackson over there in the audience was responsible for actually implementing that 30 years ago. So any faults we have in the system, we just talked to her about it. So, but we're replacing that system with a flexible cloud-based statewide client management system that will allow us and our partner organizations to better organize, define, and standardize our client service processes. You know, as we know, before the pandemic, states were strategizing on integrating healthcare and social services systems. One outcome of the pandemic was a realization of the critical importance of social services to one's health, just as important as clinical indicators. So accordingly, that focus on integration will only intensify. So one of the biggest challenges that healthcare and social services organizations confront when trying to partner with one another is the lack of an IT infrastructure with data standards that span across both systems. So as state agencies plan and implement IT solutions that will enable that integration, they should do so very, very carefully indeed. I would say the first thing that you should approach as a state agency to a procurements of this nature, of course, I should have pressed this. How do I load the slideshow? I need my glasses. Thank you. The first one, second one, second one. Just press it. It's always funny when you do the IT presentation and you can't handle the IT. I told you, Mr. Chair, we're lean and mean at our organization. This is other duties as assigned, okay? So, you know, it should justify LBR requests. It should do right there, you know. You know. But I think is, you know, that the first thing an agency should do when they enter a procurement of any size, let alone something with IT, is with humility. We have to recognize that this something like this is not within our skill set, that we do not have the required technical expertise or procurement expertise, or indeed any procurement expertise of any type that would enable us to engage and secure a contract that would be of value, a return on the investment to the state. We have to recognize that we are coming at this from a less than admirable place. I think the vendors that we do business with are very well equipped to ensuring that they get the best for their shareholders. We are not similarly equipped to getting the best deal for the taxpayers. So we have to recognize that and be very serious about that. And I think, you know, several years ago, there were issues with agencies going down a path, a very expensive path, and then Representative Grant and Senator Harrell were pointing out concerns with that. It's one of the things that kept me up at night was how do we procure something like this? And that's why we were delighted to hear about the Cloud Solutions Alternative Contract Source from DMS. And to give you a little example about this information, the state of Utah, acting by and through the National Association of State Procurement Officials, NASPO, competitively procured and awarded a request for proposal that resulted in a master agreement. Now, that master agreement was created as a cooperative purchasing agreement for Cloud Solutions. And as pursuant to statutes 287.042, DMS can authorize to evaluate contracts let by the federal government, another state or a political subdivision for the provision of commodities and contract services. And if it is determined in writing to be cost-effective in the best interest of the state to enter into a written agreement authorizing the agency to make purchases under that contract. And we did just that. And I just say that with some additional information because there has been some questions of me about what NASPO contracts are. But I think that's something that's really exciting to us because this is pre-negotiated and we didn't have to sort of worry about sort of people taking advantage of our lack of expertise. Accordingly, we chose WellSky, who was a cloud solution partner to that addendum. And WellSky's solution is a fully managed off-the-shelf software as a service cloud solution, and it does ensure compliancy with current Florida law. Requiring that solution. I think it was House Bill 5301 a couple of years ago that created that law. But more importantly, it is actually purpose-built for aging and long-term care programs, which obviously has helped minimize implementation risks. It's used by over the half of the country's state units on aging. It's used by over half of the AAAs in the country. And our federal funding provider, Administration Community Living, also uses the same solution. But it also complies with the governor's November 11th of 2019 directive requiring agencies providing health, human, and educational services to collaborate on their IT systems. And it is compatible with the work being conducted by ARCA on the FX project, which Secretary Marsteller did such a great job explaining how that complicated process is working so well. And there has been our operational plan has been approved by the Center for Medical Services in Washington. Obviously, it went through the Florida Digital Services here and ARCA as well. So we've been keeping everybody very fully informed. I think that humility that necessary also extended to understanding of management of a project of this type was critical. We did not have that skill set. So we have hired an excellent project manager, a guy called Gary Didio, who has also done work with highway safety and motor vehicles. And he has been singly successful in helping navigate, herd the cats is what I call it, on this project, in conjunction with his counterpart in WellSky, Jennifer Buck, who have been doing great yeoman's work on getting this project underway. We kicked off about a year ago in September 2020. One of my first tasks was actually emailing all the stakeholders. We, ARCA, APD, Department of Health, Florida Digital Service, and also OPB, inviting them to pre-implementation consultation sessions to hear and discuss our goals, our current reporting, and the future sort of opportunities for sharing data and that interoperability, which we're hearing so much about. It's organized the implementation into two phases. Our primary goal for phase one is to really evaluate the ways that the department provides our services, keeping those processes at work and redesigning those that can provide more efficiency. So, you know, and also addition, we'll be evaluating technology options to assist us with implementing the improved process. So we're looking at the as-is processes and then look like what to-be processes and seeing what really works best. I think that's going to be pretty exciting a project to be involved with that phase one. As you can see here, it's the majority of our programs that are going to be in that phase one, which is scheduled to be 2 months from now. Yeah, end of December 13th, I think it is. Yeah. That's in the second phase. We'll be delivering the remaining functionality. The IT folks put this in. It just shows you it's a very busy slide, but I'll tell you, it's seeing these and being being responsive to the ever-changing situations has been invaluable. But you'll see there that the go-live date is in December. We are currently under budget, which is not really the headline. Our current spend on this project has been $3.5 million there. And I should have mentioned on the slide here that only 800,000 of that is general revenue. The rest is trust funded. And in our legislative budget request for this year, we are requesting another $850,000 in GR and another $1.5 million in trust fund as well. Moving forward, it's going to be a cost of about $2.3 million, probably along the same split of trust fund and general revenue. But I'll be able to get back with Brian and inform them exactly what that should look like. But obviously, we're very excited to maximize the use of trust fund from CMS in that effort. You know, as well with Florida Digital Service that the committee was talking about on the previous presentation, we have fully engaged them from day one. And I think that was critical, you know, especially with Representative Grant now sort of the state CIO. We wanted to make sure that we availed ourselves of his and his staff's expertise, and we have been sort of doing quite well in getting their attention, getting their help, but also scoring well and showing that it's a low-risk project. And here is some scores for August of 2021. The only low one is the schedule management. We were having some data migration issues. You can imagine after 30 years, a lot of data has developed. And data migration has caused us to sort of delay implementation by 2 months, which will be now in December. But other than that, we've got 100%. So it's nice to see that. This is really an important part of the presentation here, because we recognize that this project involves multiple offices, you know, the AAAs, the hundreds of providers, numerous other stakeholders whose daily lives are going to be impacted by that project. You know, a major system replacement project like this crosses funding sources, functional areas, organizational units, and even external organizations in the provider network. And so from the start, we did recognize that organizational change would require a clear vision, a relentless focus, vocal sponsorship, and the collective effort of so many individuals to ensure success. I've never taken change for granted. Took me back to my school days and a quote from Machiavelli. Machiavellian healthcare, who'd know? But anyway, the quote is, it should be borne in mind that there's nothing more difficult to arrange, more doubtful of success, and more dangerous to carry through than initiating changes. The innovator makes enemies of all those who prospered under the old order, and only lukewarm support is forthcoming from those who would prosper under the new. Their support is lukewarm, partly because men are generally incredulous, never really trusting new things unless they have tested them by experience. It's one of the things I do remember from my school days, but it's a good quote I thought to bring to the table today. So our status quo may be antiquated, inadequate, and even frustrating at times, but to the user base, the existing system is a known variable in their busy operational lives. So we knew it would be challenging to help stakeholders feel engaged and excited about the changes unless they clearly understood that change and ultimately see themselves as beneficiaries. So we've had 7 work streams. We have a WellSky implementation, a solution design, data migration, reports, training, providers, network support, and communication. And each of those work streams have had weekly meetings and provide weekly status updates. Every day of the week, there's always something going on with regards to the eCERTS project. And I will tell you, with the Zoom technology platform, has really enabled us to bring more people to the table. It's amazing to sort of tune into some of these things. I do so from time to time just to sort of watch. Don't understand a lot of it, but I watch. And seeing these individuals who are dealing with this from all parts of the state and engaging in a lively discussion and talking about what they want to see from this system has been really gratifying. And some of the training sessions have been sort of really entertaining and are exciting. It's amazing to say that about IT, but it really is true. And like I said, the two ladies here today can, if you want to ask some questions about some of the specifics, their staff have been playing in that sandbox. And we're really excited about this is a truly grassroots effort to come up with a system that's going to benefit us all moving forward. But, you know, I think the whole thing has enabled us to be aware of decisions on solution design, status of data migration efforts, training development. We're using Smartsheet, and that creates an ease of access to information by all stakeholders so they can review everything that's been going on. You know, but communication has been and is critical because to accept that change, the stakeholders first and foremost, they do need that information. So providing adequate detail regarding the proposed change has led to understanding, and I think that's definitely improved the level of user cooperation. And we do send out a weekly eCERTS newsletter that's used as a communication device to alert all stakeholders to updates on the project, meeting dates, training courses to date, and other pertinent information. And I do participate in monthly meetings with the executive WellSky staff and also both the project managers as well to make sure that we're all on track and any other issues that have to be resolved are being resolved to my satisfaction so I can report back to the governor's office and obviously engage with ARCA and with Florida Digital Service if appropriate. You know, throughout this project, WellSky has been a really committed partner, and I really thank them for that. But those project managers have been invaluable. They bring a level of expertise that has been necessary to success. CMS from the federal side of things has been really fantastic, working with us to actually sort of come up with a great product, and Florida Digital Service as well, and FX. And, you know, it wasn't always that way. I mean, when I first started this, you know, we were going down a path of old, of going down things, making decisions that were not going to be good. And we were under the gun from FX. And, you know, when you're on the Zoom platform, you've got like 8 or 9 people in front of you, and they're all disapproving faces looking at me. And I was like, oh, you know. So now they're not. They're actually good. And I will tell you, Florida Digital Service paid us a compliment and mentioned that the eSearch project is actually an example of a well-run state project, which is faint praise indeed from Representative Grant, so to get something like that. So I was really pleased to hear that. But that's because everyone's been working together. You know, we've got many, many folks in the department and the AAAs and the providers all diving in and really wanting to make this a success. So I really thank them for all that. And I think Henry Ford said, if everyone is moving forward together, then success takes care of itself. I think that really is true. So that's my update, Mr. Chair, and I'll be willing to answer any questions the committee has.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. That was a great presentation. Members, we have questions. Questions for the Secretary. It was that good, Mr. Secretary.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, okay. Mr. Secretary. All right, members. You know, this concludes our subcommittee agenda. Is there any further business before the subcommittee? Okay, seeing no further business. Representative Woodson moves that we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.